You know, I practice daily, and now and then my kids come downstairs and they'll wake me up and ask me, why are you sitting, you know? What are you doing just sitting there? And this happens quite often. Some of my very close relatives have said, I'm just sitting there hallucinating. And one incident I'll never forget. So this big family, my sister has a dining table from here all the way to that couch. It's huge, you know. And so the whole family is sitting around and enjoying. So one of them says, you know, Sudhir, are you hiding from the world, closing your eyes? You know? And then he said, a cat, when she drinks milk or when she's stealing milk, in India we have many stray cats. So they just come in the house and they will steal milk or whatever, you know. And whatever they steal and drink or eat, they always will have their eyes closed. You might have noticed if you have, even as a pet, if you see a cat drinking milk, the cat will have her eyes closed, right? Am I right? At least when they are stealing, and I have seen that with my eyes. But anyways, the statement he made was that the cat keeps her eyes closed because she is stealing. And so he thinks, I am keeping my eyes closed is because I'm hiding something from the world. So he was relating closing of eyes with a cat stealing milk. Then another incident which happened recently, I went to a religious gathering, and the argument was, if you meditate, your mind opens up and then the devil enters your mind. So you better not meditate and open up your mind, because the devil is going to get inside you. So there are different perceptions of what we do. And so we have to understand compassionately what different people think about meditation, you know. But the scientific community is on our side, you know. And we talked about that last Sunday. Different scientific findings, different research projects over the past 30 years have given definite evidence of the benefits of meditation. You know? We talked about the project called Attention Blink, in which the scientists found out that those who meditate regularly, they do not have that disorder, attention blink, where your consciousness slips through the crack. So we have neurological correlate showing that meditation improves your attention span and minimizes attention blink, which minimizes accidents and mishaps, you know. We also talked about the binocular rivalry test, if you remember. The scientist will show right eye and left eye different lines. You know, the right eye they will expose to horizontal lines and the left eye to vertical lines, and find out how well you can still perceive the image and stay with the image and understand the image. And they realized that the meditators were able to do that much better than non-meditators. So somewhere we are bringing our vision to the center and not having that problem of binocular rivalry, the eyes fighting for the vision, you know. So we have evidence of that. We also talked about relaxation response, which many people now are very aware of, that meditation invariably gives rise to relaxation. Yeah. And then we also talked about the alpha wave, brain wave patterns, that the EEGs done on meditators will always show the alpha wave brain patterns than the beta wave brain patterns. And the beta waves are related to discursive thinking, overthinking. And alpha waves are related to focused thinking, contemplation, relaxed way of thoughtfulness, so on and so forth. So, and apparently there are also cardiovascular benefits of meditation. I don't know if you are studying any of that in school, but the scientists have found out that the meditation practice actually reduces the cardiovascular or coronary artery disease significantly. That's a very, I don't know if Mary, you've studied that. And more studies are coming up and showing that meditation practice lowers your blood pressure significantly, reduces the cholesterol level, and also it minimizes the secretion of cortisol and the lactate. These are hormones that are related to stress, you know, adrenaline and cortisol and all these stress hormones. If we are constantly under stress, chronic stress, and constantly in the mode of fight or flight, the body will secrete these hormones, adrenaline and cortisol and lactate, and an overdose of these hormones is what causes harm, you know. And meditation does not allow that. It minimizes the secretion of hormones that are related to stress. So I think that is also a great, great finding, in my opinion. And we also talked about how meditation actually thickens your cerebral cortex. In my opinion, that is a profound finding. You're actually making your brain larger, you know.
I heard a physician give a presentation saying that meditators have a more active frontal lobe.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And they bypass the reptilian brain and go through, you know, they just go away from the limbic system, which creates all the stress hormones too.
That's true. Absolutely. It takes you away from the it transforms the reptilian brain into mammalian brain. And the frontal cortex, it's actually those of us who use the right side of our frontal cortex are more emotionally sensitive, more susceptible to stress. But meditation somehow shifts that. It takes your cognitive functions to the left portion. Some of the cognitive functions, higher brain functions, are moved to the left part of your frontal lobe. So now you have the left frontal lobe and the right frontal lobe working together.
His theory was because you focus here, mm-hmm. you know, you're bringing awareness here and you're taking away from the rest of the stuff that's going on there. And that's when they have more active frontal lobe, center frontal lobe.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you think about, you know, the triangle of the nose right above it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the root.
Yeah.
You go to the root.
Go to the root. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So, interesting thing is those who can manage pain better, you know, those who are less sensitive. Sensitive meaning they don't react to pain easily. Those people seem to have a thicker cerebral cortex. The frontal lobe is part of the cerebral cortex. You know? Isn't that interesting that people who are less susceptible to pain have a thicker cerebral cortex, and people who meditate also have a thicker cerebral cortex? You know? But I'm not just taking a leap of faith here and saying that means we meditators can handle pain better. You know, I'm not saying that directly, but I'm saying that there is some correlation there. You know, that we are in effect cultivating, culturing our brain to handle pain, you know, better, because we're thickening our cerebral cortex. And there have been studies done on this issue. There is a university in North Carolina, Bob Coghill, I don't know if you heard the name, but what he did was he had 17 volunteers, some who practiced meditation, some who did not, and then he inflicted pain on their calf muscles and then observed how they reacted to the pain, and lo and behold, every single meditator was able to handle pain to a much larger degree. I mean, their pain envelope was like this compared to the non-meditators. I think that's a profound finding. Another study where they took the fMRIs of all the meditators who were irritated by some very irritating sound, you know, like a baby crying, or something that is agitating and irritating. And also the same test was done on non-meditators. They were induced with some agitation. And then as they were induced with agitation, the MRI scanning was done. And again, there was very little reaction to that pain or agitation in the meditators. Repeatedly, their frontal lobe would light up compared to the other people, where it would be the amygdala or the thalamus, and, you know. And apparently what meditation does is it makes your active sympathetic nervous system subordinate to your relaxed parasympathetic nervous system. So somehow we are moving from the sympathetic nervous system to the parasympathetic nervous system, which makes a lot of difference in how we react to pain and agitation and so on and so forth.